Well, I'm Kyle Menzies, and
I'm Jason Rutherford, the creator of the Online Army Showcase, and this is The Battlefield. Welcome to the pilot episode of The Battlefield, the official podcast of the Online Army Showcase at army.rockosoftware.com. From the figures in front of us, you can tell tonight's topic is MechWarrior Dark Age, and specifically some of the upcoming changes to the game. Late last year, WSGI had their annual State of the MechWarrior chat, I believe what they call it. Oh, State of the Union chat, my mistake. But where they announced several upcoming changes. The first and biggest is probably getting rid of these stupid things, the booster packs. Instead of selling just random boosters, they're probably going to offer things called action packs, where you actually know exactly what you're getting in the packs, similar to how other games such as Warhammer and maybe War Machine do it. So, at first, I thought this was a good idea. You know, it seems, because I mean, I could never really like the darn booster packs.
Because, obviously, as you can see, they should be just tossed out and, you know, break them in little pieces because you never got whatever you needed.
Hey, you spend $40 and, you know, you get like, I get one Banzer Raider tank. Yes, since I only play the Banzer Raiders. But,
and then the rest of them is a multicolored army of crap. Kind of reminds me of my army that I started with.
The Technicolor Army of Crap, where you had every single faction represented, regardless of how illogical or ridiculous that was. It wasn't even a power army like some people like to do. It was just a mix and match.
All I had was the Brick Army guy.
But, yeah. Oh. But I think, after the initial thinking, the one thing that concerned me was it's going to destroy the secondary market, which, ironically, is where most of my figures come from. You can see from, I got a fair assortment here, but I mean, our largest collection, over here, we got about another, what do you say, a couple hundred pieces sitting in these boxes off the side here?
And that's just those boxes. We have like boxes. Two more armies. But I don't think it would actually destroy the secondary market, though.
Well, the thing is, like, I mean, upwards, some of these pieces, like a bunch of Hauberk pieces here, these are 25 cents each. And that's because they keep, people who buy the darn cases get 500 pieces. They only want 10 of them. The rest would go up on eBay or when I bought these off some other store. So if you know exactly what you're going to get, you know, you're not going to sell your other crappy pieces because you're not going to go ahead and buy them in the first place.
But most people, though, I know sell their armies in, you know, giant groups.
That's true, that's true.
If you're just starting out and you need an army, you go online and buy a giant army. And you can get it for usually pretty cheap.
That's true, that's a good point. Like your little Stormhammer purchase you pulled off that one time.
Was it only $40? Like a $300 worth of buying booster packs, and that's saying they actually got what you needed.
Yeah. That's back when people were jumping and bailing from the game, running and screaming, MechWarrior's going downhill, no, run!
Technically, we can't really even use these pieces in the new game.
Actually, they actually got rid of Set Retirement recently.
Oh, really?
That's probably one reason I'm actually here talking about MechWarrior. I kind of gave up in this game after the whole Set Retirement crap came along. But because midway through last year, WizKids like axed half their development team. Well, actually, reorganized their development team. And I guess plainly laid them off. I shouldn't use the term axed. But yeah, one of the first things
they did... off their heads?
I hope not. But one of the first things they did was get rid of Set Retirement. So all these pieces are now are completely legal to use again, unlike before where it's only 10% of my army.
I am quite happy because I would say all my army would have been in retirement by now.
Yeah. Just about all of it, except your Age of Destruction and Beyond, which is like, what, 5 pieces?
Didn't buy anything after that.
Oh yeah, no, I didn't buy much either until Wolfstrike came around. That's when they got rid of the whole set retirement stuff. But anyway, the other interesting little thing about the... having the blister packs, I think it'll overall improve the quality of the game, because there's a lot of pieces that are just, you know, before were just called maybe booster filler, where they're just worthless pieces of crap.
You mean like the combat engineer?
Yeah, I think like the combat engineer. I'm not sure exactly if he was ever useful. Where's some... this one's sitting in front of me.
I don't think anyone's ever used the combat engineer.
I've never seen it used, but I haven't played in any tournaments. Well, I played a few tournaments, and all against 10-year-old kids, so that's not the most exciting, most tactically challenging event. Yeah, we used to.
So it's luck.
Luck for them. They have a chance of stopping me. But yeah, I think this. Obviously, if you're going to produce crappy figures that are totally useless, no one's going to buy them, they're going to sit in the shelf. Like, you know, either, say, War Machine or Warhammer. there's a lot fewer pieces for faction, but they're actually almost all fairly usable in reasonable situations. So, you know, you're not going to spend $35, like in the case of the broadside, and get a worthless piece of crap that you're never going to use. But one question, though, is how much would you actually pay for these figures if you know you're actually going to get what you want and not just a random selection of things?
Probably be actually willing to pay a little bit more for that than normally, because if I can actually get what I want, I don't have any need to sell it on eBay, or, you know, which nobody will buy the crappy pieces anyways, and I'd actually use them for a purpose, and not just throw them against the wall and hope they die.
Airsoft targets, I've done that a few times.
Well, give me your airsoft gun and I'll see what I can do.
I should go get those upstairs. But yeah, like, would you pay $35 for mech? Because, I mean, the broadside pieces are $35, and they're not much bigger than, say, on One-Eye Jack here. Except they do have a few metal pieces to them. It makes them a little bit nicer.
For little metal pieces? I did not know that.
Because that's the thing. One advantage, of, like, I'd probably pay more for, say, War Machine and Warhammers, because these are actual kits. I personally enjoy assembling and painting the figures. I know I'm kind of the minority when that comes around, but...
No, I know a few people that like that, too.
So, I mean, for that reason, I'm willing to actually pay a little bit more for the figures, but I wouldn't pay $35 for, well, I shouldn't say that. I did pay $20 for Megan 10 Clay and another $20 for the original One-Eyed Jack figure, which really...
And this one was $35, but I got half off.
So, I mean, some of the best ones I'd probably pay maybe upwards of 20 of them.
But, yeah, so maybe if it was like 20, maybe up to $25, but not beyond that. And that's saying that they're good quality and... Not like some of the figures we've received in the past.
The mech that you drop in the ground one time and they effectively split in half.
Yeah, I like that mech.
Like that mech. Or the other, I actually got this Atlas that traded Sunfire or Sunburst for him. Because I got him in a booster draft. And that other Atlas actually came in the package in two pieces. Or you get the mechs that have two left hands or they're...
Arms
are falling off. Oh yeah, some of the hatchet men back in the days of Fire for Effect reportedly had like two left hands. And they had like a backwards hatchet sticking over this direction.
So did that give him a double attack?
Unfortunately, no. But that'd be pretty funny if it did. You went up, backwards rear arc attack.
Oh, but that's unfortunate. Especially with how much people paid for the figures too.
Get $10 and hey, two of my figures are broken. That's wonderful. But I think it'll be overall be better for the game.
I would have to agree with that. So
the other neat change is the Solaris 7 is coming back as an official expansion for MechWarrior. Like for those of you who are not too familiar with the Solaris game, it began maybe a couple of years ago in a Gen Con event where there people were just running it at the Gen Con convention. And you basically control one mech, but there's a lot more advanced rules to how you move, how you shoot, and how you attack people, and it got on pretty popular. I know, like,
it's like a gladiator event where you have only control one person, and you could move up through the ranks and get, you know, points. And it was a lot more fun than the normal, you know, tournaments, especially when with the rules that they had at the time made it not so much fun for that, but we'll get to that later.
But okay, a couple of years ago, we actually were in a 13-week Solaris tournament, and that was really quite a blast to play in.
It was too bad that I only missed like one or two. I missed one, I think, one day, which cost me the tournament.
One place behind me, and I was like one place behind Keith.
But yeah, I would have been above you if I had been there that one day.
One day, because you won a lot with your little Arbalest. Your steel Arbalest, you ran around and just fired your streak missiles over everything.
Oh.
But at some point, I guess WizKids pulled the game, or pulled the rule set back into house, whatever exactly that meant, but they pretty much made it illegal for a venue to run a WizKids-sponsored event as a Solaris tournament. Why they did that, they never really officially announced anything. I mean, you could go ahead and make all sorts of conspiracy theories if you want, but...
I think they're just being dumb.
They're just being dumb. Well, they did that few... Made it
I think they just screwed up any, you know... momentum they had with that, you know, drawing in crowds and, you know, selling their product better. What? You know?
But at least they're correcting their mistake and bringing it back, I believe, in the summer, because they're actually going to release a Solaris rule set, a rule pack. You buy, you get a couple mechs, you get a little battle map, and he gets basically a Solaris starter set.
Do you have to use those exact mechs for the star set Solaris? Or can you use the previous ones?
Anything, I believe they're setting us on anything previously will be legal. So it'll be, I don't know if it'll be similar to how the original Solaris was run. I mean, that'd be pretty cool if it was. And that was a fun little rule set to gang up people. You have like six people take on the champion, just bring him down in 2 seconds. Or the sort of other crazy rules like the explosive bombs and stuff you'd have. But
only thing that I missed was the fact that we weren't allowed to use unique people. And that because right, yeah. They were actual pilots, and therefore you couldn't use them, like Jeff Becker here, which would have been an amazing, assault class match.
But at least now there's actually, you know, a assortment of assault, like non-unique, so if they were to run that anymore, you actually could use non-unique mechs in assault class. It'd be a lot of fun, so we'll see if menus pick it back up in the future. Hopefully they do. I'd like to go ahead and have
I think that was the only fun I had during the time in the
various tournaments.
Yeah, because they were so much better than the stupid little building armies against people because you're against 10-year-olds. And that they were all idiots and they would attack you when the one guy with the actual powerful army that they leave alone.
10 years in the Solaris tournaments or the normal tournaments?
Normal tournaments.
Normal tournaments, yeah, there's a few of those out there. But, you know, there were a few of those in the Solaris tournaments.
The
one kid who just played the charge at you every time.
He charged at me every time!
I thought it did charge for more. It's like,
didn't we call him the Charge Monkey?
I think the name of Charge Monkey. It's like, don't. I would tell the kid, leave me alone, you won't die in 3 turns, but he insisted on attacking me and then die in 3 turns later and be the first guy out.
He always attacked both of us. It was one or the other, and then when he got hit by me, he would run to you.
Oh well, it was an easy automatic, like not last place finish, even if you were the best player, but hey. It takes a while to learn the game, it's not the most easiest thing to pick up. Solaris does add a lot of complexity to the rule set.
But you're only still controlling one mech, so it would make it a little bit easier to understand the rules, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. So it's different style of rules, but the last other introduction they're saying, 2008, they're introducing a new, basically a new storyline almost. It says a new big war that's going to engulf the Republic of the Sphere. So that's all they said. So it's basically up to jump in conclusions and, you know, it's people are trying to ask questions saying that this is going to be this faction, it's going to be that faction. They were pretty, you know, closed mouth about it, not saying what's going to happen. Do you have any ideas?
I have no ideas. They've been keeping this pretty, you know, tightly shut because I think this is their best idea they've had in a long time, so I don't think they want to screw it up.
I wonder if they're ever going to bring in the whole idea of who actually shut down the HPG grid. It's been like, what, 2002 was when the game came out? It's been almost 4.5 years and there's like no one saying anything about
it. I don't think
it.
They even went into the whole plot of it. I think that was a drastic mistake, just avoiding them going to every little random war battle until Jade Falcon appeared.
Just an excuse to get some, to create a plotline for the game, so, I don't know, maybe 2008, we'll find out more about that. I think someone actually asked that question, but obviously WizKids didn't give any kind of definitive answer on it. So.
Maybe they didn't have an answer.
They might not. I think way back at the start, I posted on one of the forums, like, do you ever think that maybe they don't really know who shut down the HPG grid? And what they're doing is basically, you know, they're kind of tapping into the knowledge base of all the MechWarrior and BattleTech fans and let them come up with some crazy theory. Because when you log in their forums, they have a little disclaimer saying that they have the right to basically any storyline ideas, any technology, anything you come up, they have the right to take it and use it in the game.
Well, you know, that'd be fun if there's actually, you know, good ideas out there, but if they kind of took something stupid.
It's the usual name suspects. You always get the Word of Blake. Some people say it's Clan Wolverine coming back or they've been exterminated 300 years ago or whatnot, but the only evidence they had was in one of the books, Blood Avatar, where they called it the Unholy Trinity. Between it was the Republic of the Sphere, the Word of Blake, and was it Clan Blood Spirit or something? Where they had mentioned that Devil and Stone actually had some kind of genetic alteration done to him, where he would theoretically have the ability to survive
a nuclear attack.
No, what was it? Freezing, where you freeze
somebody. Freezing, cryogenic?
Yeah, cryogenic freezing. So that's, because, you know, Devlin Stone said he'd return in time of need.
Oh,
so
that's right.
They think maybe they having cryogenically frozen somewhere, and he's gonna arrive in 2008, leading the forces of the Word of Blake, because, you know, he came from a Word of Blake re-education camp, or, you know, it's all this...
Well, why was the Republic joining up with the Word of Blake?
I don't know.
Wasn't the World Blake trying to annihilate the Republic, thinking that they're pretty much corrupted?
Well, the Word of Blake is trying to kill everybody. And
yeah,
the
that's
Republic
what I'm saying.
Republic came later in the Jihad as they started fighting against them, so... I don't know. I don't know, because I think one person mentioned, I don't have the actual first book of Classic Battletech, but the first one, Dawn of Jihad, mentions there was actually two sub-factions to the Word of Blake. And so maybe the Republic was actually one of the two sub-factions in disguise, trying to eliminate the other in the name of the good guys. So then, for some reason, they did 60 years of peace, and now they're coming back to overtake everybody again for who knows what reason.
Kind of like Clan Wolf?
Yeah, Clan Wolf does that kind of stuff. They kind of, let's go hiding, come back, but yeah. I don't know. That's my best guess, but... I guess one of the interesting ideas you gotta take stabs at is what are they gonna change? Like, are they gonna change any of the gameplay mechanics or the game, or...?
Well, I think they'd have to stick with the basic set rules, as poor as some of them were, because everyone has gotten used to those rules and based all their tactics on those rules. By changing it, they're going to change their fan base and ultimately could hurt them.
That's going to be interesting, because, you know, like, I don't know, like you're saying of some of the poor rules, we've actually, for a number of years, never played with the normal, the whole normal rule set in MechWarrior for one reason.
It sucked!
Whether it's, yeah, you know, it sounded like it sucked, or they were, it got the nickname of Bumper Bots, because it was like,
charging it.
Yeah, you, these little industrial mechs, they just run in from 20 inches, smashing your guys beyond the weapons range and stuff, but yeah. So I thought it'd be interesting to discuss some of our actual changes we did, so maybe just toss some different house rules out there. People can try out, you know, modify and let us know if they like some ideas. And, you know, I know a few times we tried to create alternate rules projects, but for a while WizKids threatened to shut down anyone that tried to do that kind of thing. And then they did their whole unrestricted events where you legally could do it. So we renamed it as unrestricted rule set, and we found a loophole and everything. But yeah, so I thought I'd just kind of go over some of those tactics.
Go right ahead.
I think the biggest is the move and shoot. Every single guy in the battlefield has a move and shoot ability.
Like in the classic Battletech.
Yes, like classic Battletech, or the MechWarrior computer games, or
anything.
Or real life modern Abrams tanks.
Because we know everyone can move and shoot.
Yeah. That'd be pretty sad to say, you know, the modern M1A2 tank the nicest Mildred has, and that thing drives a mile, fires a gun, and his side armor panel falls off because he had to push it. That'd be pretty pathetic, so. The rules we actually came up with, for example, would be, first you had to change the way order tokens are handled. You know, traditionally, let me move some guys out of the way so you can kind of see what I'm doing here. With any vehicle, they perform an action, and whether they move or whether they shoot, you gave them an order token. Now, if you gave them two order tokens, that would make them considered pushed, and you would go ahead and give them a click of damage.
So when do you get rid of those order tokens?
So then you get rid of the order tokens, you know, a turn after it doesn't do anything. So, now what we've done is an order is not just a move order. You get, basically, you have an option of either doing a move order and a standard attack order or a special attack order. Now, the important difference here is a move order is the same. You can do, you obviously move your full distance. So you can move your full distance, then perform a special, or perform a combat order. Or you can form your combat order first, then move your full distance. That way you can kind of shoot and fade back. Now, so what I mean by a combat order is either a standard ranged attack, or a close combat attack. If the unit, say, infantry, or the mech for that matter, can go ahead and do that kind of thing.
And the special attack?
And a special attack is obviously the usual special attacks. The charge, death from above, ram,
or... Mainly used by... Max.
Or max, yes. Or an artillery attack. So therefore, the issue with the artillery attack is you cannot move and then drop a shell down on somebody. You gotta do them one or the other.
Because an artillery attack would consist of two tokens.
Yes. It could be, Yeah, there was two Toga things to explain in just a moment. But yeah, because artillery, often overpowered artillery, was one of the complaints a lot of people had. Sword Sword and Arrow 4, and you know, just dropping down Togas on the
place. Steel Wolves Paladin when that came out.
Now the defense system where, the Lao one, people, someone calculated if you place like the token 1.3 inches off like 80 degrees of target, you have like 83% chance of hitting. He sat down to do the geometry and showed how easy it was.
Or the Paladin defense system, or the Highlander, which had point defense and put peasant companies around it.
Ooh.
So
damn peasant.
The iron wall. But yeah, so the difference there is now, if you when you move, you get an order token. And when you make a combat order, you also get an order token. However, unlike traditional Dark Age rules, two order tokens are not a push. A third one is. So, therefore, you can basically move and then fire in one turn, and you're not going to push, you're not going to take any damage, because you should be able to move and fire.
Well, if you move again, or fire again, you're going to take damage.
Yes, that's when you push and take damage. And also, the one thing to notice, unlike one of the changes in Age Destruction, where formations, if they move, you push in the move, they don't take a damage, that rule doesn't exist. So, in our rules, even if it's a formation, and you move, and
because
push it.
We consider it part of the firing squad. So
they still take a full point of damage. And therefore, in case of a special attack, such as artillery, you actually give them two order tokens instead of just one. So now, if they say the artillery unit had moved in the previous turn and has an order token on it, an artillery attack would give it two and therefore would push it. And pushing damage occurs at the end of your current turn. So that's probably the biggest rule change. And obviously mechs also have that ability, where they can move their full distance and shoot, which makes the solitaire a nice little fast attack unit. And one of the things is, running with a mech has been changed slightly. As in traditional classic battle tech, it's now only 1.5 times your running, rounded up. So that makes the mechs a little bit slower.
So you don't just become charge monkeys?
Yes. We don't want charge monkeys. Charge monkeys just are like, yeah, they don't make the game very exciting. The game's about shooting and blasting and crap out of other people, not running around saying, hey, boom. So, the sad reality is that guy would probably be able to do that to this guy with this 3-attack and 14-inch movement evade.
80-ton mech against what, 30-ton mech?
I want to say about 30, 35 tons. It's maybe 25. It's pretty light. But the other interesting thing, the heat rules have changed sadly for mechs. Walking never ever gives them aura token and never ever gives them any heat. Which, the fact that you could actually walk around the battlefield and shut down was pretty ridiculous. Mechs just can't do that. I don't care what logic, what universe you're trying to argue from, they just don't
shut
do
down.
So therefore,
shutdown sequence has been initiated.
However, running and jumping still gives them order token and a click of heat as it would traditionally.
And firing.
And firing works the same way as in normal MechWarrior Dark Age rules. Say, if you have no order tokens, give them order token. If they fire with order token, you give them a click of heat. And so on.
How about energy weapons? Energy weapons just give them order token?
Yep, the same energy weapons, just the same. And if you hit an opposing mech, it obviously gives them an click of heat as well. And the cool thing, though, is that you can attack now with both your weapons on a mech. Now, obviously, it generates heat a lot quicker, but that gives the mechs obviously an advantage in that they can go ahead and either fire both their weapons, or if they happen to have a guy that has a close combat weapon, you can run up, fire, you can run up, shoot your weapon, and then smack down on the guy, which obviously gives them more tactical flexibility.
Those mechs are an extremely powerful ability. Was there any way to compensate for, you know, like tanks and stuff that we did? Range?
They seem to hold their own pretty well, because they're obviously usually pretty cheaper. I mean, obviously, an assault mech that does 5 damage is upwards of 2.5 times what a tank would be. And if you notice, I keep putting little infantry guys alongside the tank here, because that's the tactic we come to call the kill box. It proves to be highly, highly effective in these modified rule sets.
Yeah.
Usually they're accompanied by long-range infantry. In this case, I've got hauberks, which normally a lot of people wouldn't use, because in normal rules, they're pretty crappy. However, considering they have 14-inch range, they can provide a full support to the formation.
How much does it improve their accuracy?
+2 per supporting infantry, just like in traditional MechWarrior rules. However, now the fact that you can move, in this case, 8 inches, and get a 14 attack at 14 inches, that's pretty powerful. And it'll smack the opponent for, in this case, the M1 Marks 1, 4 damage armor piercing. Or it could be upwards of 5 of the Behemoth, or some of your units have...
5 and improved targeting on some of them.
And the other little changes you got, obviously, are VTOLs, which, obviously, VTOLs' original ability was the ability to move and shoot, so... What we've done with them is actually they have a new...
Bring out one?
Yeah, I should have brought one out at the start, but here we go.
Oh, the base of one.
Base of one, and the wrong figure on top of it, but who cares? It's actually a cavity attack, all kinds of base and a lamprey.
Oh, thank you for that.
You know, traditionally in MechWarrior rules, you'd move, say, a fire on the move would cost you 12 moving points. Well, screw that crap. All units can move and attack now, so you've got a full 20-inch movement. And still be able to fire. But giving them even more flexibility is they have the ability to split their movement. So they can move, so he can move, say, 10 inches,
fire,
and duck back 10 inches. So you could have a little building here, he could be hiding behind, pop out, fire, and then fly back in
instead
and hide behind it.
Making them just fodder for the, mechs to shoot down in one turn.
So that, obviously they've got the little ability where they can go from low elevation, high elevation, start them at low elevation behind the building, two movement gets them up to high elevation, take a pot shot, other two movement backs them down. They become like a nice little pop and
a little bit of annoyance.
Oh, yeah, they become a little bit annoying, especially if you got some of those swords from ballast, you just kind of hide up, 16 inch attack, duck back down. So,
and the final rule we had was didn't we change how. We got rid of indirect firing.
Yeah, we got rid of indirect firing.
Firing over a building seems highly inaccurate to begin with, and second, kind of impossible to control.
Because, back in the day of, classic Battletech, where you had indirect firing could only be done with LRMs, and you had a spotter to do that. So, but the problem is, in MechWarrior Dark Age, all you've got is ballistic attacks, which kind of lumps together, obviously, LRMs, autocannons, and Gauss rifles. So if you can figure out how you can aim a Gauss rifle straight up, fire it, and have it come down on your opponent on the other side of the wall, we'd love to hear that. But that apparently hasn't been figured out yet. So we decided to get rid of indirect fire, which inherently boosted your streak capabilities, which you obviously like if you play as Steel Wolves.
Yeah, because
formations there?
This is my best formation. I included two figures in the old rules, which would have been entirely useless. Nobody ever used these. They were considered the most piece of crap, worthless piles of junk. But in this case, with them both having streak abilities, and with a Jesse 2, or 3 in this case, formation, run them around buildings because in streaking they actually lock onto it with missiles, which makes a lot of sense. So run around behind buildings and fire at them and don't have people firing back. Makes it very, very deadly.
Which ironically, we had to actually tweak some other things, building damage and stuff. And
oh yeah,
we can discuss those in another episode, because that could be a whole lecture in itself, how we handle the building damage.
Because that became a little too powerful.
Well, that was back, because that was actually back before we, under some old rules we had, really old rules, where actually you doubled all the ranges of the weapons.
Ooh.
That was just really, really messy.
Because anyone with 16 or 14 inch attacks killed everyone else.
Oh yeah. It literally became like you had your guys lined up at either side. Literally, just a couple kill boxes. And maybe one or two heavy mechs, lined up facing each other. And nothing but cannon fire in the middle. And it literally came down to, it literally came down to who would roll the 14 first to slam the other person's kill boxes. And it kind of went into stalemate. So that's why we dropped dual ranges. It actually, even though it would be more, quote, realistic in terms of the Battletech universe, this game just can't work like that.
Those kill boxes screwed everything up.
I remember I did a little demonstration, before we introduced any of the building damage rules and everything. Yeah. I had two Steel Wolf Cougars. and I held off a 600-point army with just those two of your army, just those two guys, just launching.
Really? Yeah, that's right.
Because my army was a Lance of Cougars. Like, it's two Steel Wolves, a Republic, and a Stormhammer one. The Stormhammer Republic went to south the side. There's a Steel Wolf Cougar behind a building, just launching 28-inch streak missiles on everything that moved. And they had improved targeting, so I'd be basically rolling 12s and 13s to improve targeting. That wasn't too hard.
Even though I had streak missiles myself, I couldn't get to your guys because my guys didn't have those improved targeting.
Yeah. So that was probably one of the reasons to change a lot of things, and we'll probably discuss the building damage rules in another episode. That'd be kind of fun to do and show them my little models I've got that you can actually replace things and stuff. But
yeah, where it actually made sense, where buildings could actually collapse and not be immortal.
Yeah, and your little potholes. If you shot someone and missed, it hit the building behind them and it would collapse.
It actually did damage, and you could, if you had somebody on top of the building and it collapsed and they didn't have jump jets.
Oh crap!
It was basically what did we have to roll to ensure no damage?
I want to say it was like a. I think you rolled d6 points of damage to yourself.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And we never actually.
And jump jets, we had to actually roll. If you didn't roll one or two, then you're safe. But if you rolled a one or two, then you rolled d6 damage.
Get caught in the falling debris. But yeah, so that definitely changed some of the dynamics of the game.
Made the game a lot, I think, better.
And the other big change, actually, more with artillery, was that. Along the whole idea that artillery was just too dang powerful,
didn't we have double range on the artillery at one point?
We did double range artillery at one point. That was a big mistake. I mean, if you start, regardless, we normally played at a 40-inch or 48-inch table, so even the shortest artillery, like my little thumper over here, you could be placing tokens in the enemy deployment zone right from the get-go. That was just, oh my goodness. It's like,
and then with my guy with the armor piercing everywhere. Because any guy that had armor at all got slaughtered by these guys. Didn't we have just lines of artillery? We didn't even use anything else, really.
You guys are trying to move up 6 inches, then also it's artillery coming in on top of
them. I think we each had like 4 or 5 at one time.
Yeah, probably would, because I had like 3 of these long times to slap those out.
And then I had about 4 of
these. Yeah. Just constant volley of fire. All your orders will go right to your artillery. So that went south in a hurry, but
couldn't imagine why.
I couldn't imagine why. But yeah, the one neat change was what we got here. We got a long time till we get in my box. But
oh yeah, that's right.
Looks like roommates came home.
That's cool.
But yeah, let the door open. Why the heck did you do that? We'll see if he's leaving immediately. But the attacks, what you do is. Normally, if you're just placing a token down, the actual, if you did not have a line of sight to the token, you get -2 to your attack.
That's the new rules.
Yes, that's our new rules. So that made it a lot harder to actually go ahead and hit your target. So, say he normally had like a 21 or something. So, I rolled there a...
8.
Yeah, terrible. You'll find if you ever watch me play these games, I have all these terrible simple maths. I can't hit these darn dice in the head. So I rolled an 8.
And they accused me of having low dice at one time.
I accused you of having low dice a number of times. You steal old dice fears.
I lost most of them. I need to get some new ones. I'll make sure they're loaded.
They still make them anymore.
Yeah, they do. Do they? I can tell find them on
eBay. Oh, that's true. You can find anything you want on eBay. But yeah, so I rolled an 8, so that actually normally only used track 2, and that'd be a 6. So obviously now, not only am I more or less accurate, but in addition to normal drifting on the thing, you can have an additional 1d6 on the table, 1d6 inches of drift. So this could get really far off the table if you're just firing blindly into an area, and you could be going all over the place.
Hitting your own troops even.
Oh yeah, that happened a few times. Of course, you wouldn't mind hitting your own troops if you were one a few times. You freaking steel wolves.
I get better when I get damage.
But so, there's two ways to overcome that -2 and an extra 1d6 inch drift. One, like I said, have a line of sight to target.
What's the second rule?
Or have a spotter. Any infantry unit within 14 inches can act as a spotter to that one token, or to any multiple tokens. So if you have an infantry there, he can call down, basically say, hey, call down this coordinate, fire. Fire for effect. And you can have better accuracy at hitting stuff. And that made things a lot better. So then you
try to actual more strategy to it, where you could use either one of those, but if you chose one or the other, they could cause problems for you.
So try to pick off the little infantry at the little forward infantry the enemy had, try to pick them off so you couldn't direct down accurate fire, and then you could use artillery to bring down buildings really quickly, like one or two shots could bring down an entire building and make it turn into rubble. But we'll talk about all that in another episode, so.
Guess this is going to take longer than we expected.
Yeah. But that's alright, that's about it for our rules tactics, so I'd like to, I'll probably post them online, so I'll list some of the different changes we made so you guys can give them a try out. We welcome your feedback. You can get a hold of me at jason@rockosoftware.com, that's JASON@ROCKOSOFTWARE. And
wow, you're not good with numbers, but you're great with letters.
Am I? I don't know. I could have very easily spelled that. I misspelled that. So when I say ROCKOSOFTWARE.
Yeah.
And Kyle, if you want to get a hold of him, I'll give him an email address too. He'll be Kyle@rockosoftware.com if you want to send him something directly. So we'll set those up for us, and you can get a hold of us that way. And the last thing I think you want to talk about was this little MechWarrior movie.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Mentioning. So.
There, I found recently on the internet, and if we can turn around and...
It really won't work very well.
Sure, well...
We can try that.
Right here, if you can see it or not, there's a group of actual producers that are trying to make a short 10-minute film to get the real producers, part of Hollywood, to get off their lazy, sorry butts and do something, like, fun for the movie, which looks absolutely fantastic.
You say fun for a decent movie, because if you remember, there actually was a MechWarrior movie from production several years ago, but it got axed for...
Well, no, it's still in mothballs.
Oh, is that the official terminology?
Yes.
It hasn't been cut yet?
It hasn't been cut, but there's no funding for it.
Oh, okay. I thought WizKids pulled it because the licensing was just downright... Or the story was just downright terrible.
Well, that...
I think Robot Jocks,
I think
Wing Commander-ish.
Oh, yeah. I think that was part of the reason, but besides that... Yeah, so if anyone would like to, help promote this movie and, you know, they want to send 100,000, you know, petitions, you know, pile of papers with a 10-minute, you know, short little movie just showing how great MechWarrior has a chance to be, go www.mechwarriormovie.com and sign the little form, which is at the top of the page, I believe.
Right.
It should be at the top page. Yes, it's at the top page with the email, first name, last name. And this, none of this information is distributed past just collecting for the petition.
Does this say where these guys are located in the country? Like, cause aren't they
I believe it was in the Ohio or Illinois area. Hold on. Wills. And anyone that is actually in the area, they would like... They would like some actual people to help them out. Let's see. If you're an actor or actress, 20 or 40 years old, live in the Indiana or Chicago area, and are interested.
It's not bad. That'd be fun to go there.
You know, yeah.
I love to work on that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, maybe you should email them and you'll see about a time that they would like to do that.
I wonder what 3D animation program they use. I wonder.
2D animation they have for HUDs and logos. It does not make mention of 3D, but you know we don't have too much time to look at it. But other than that, there are 4,218 votes. Last time I checked, they were at the 4,000 marker, which was just a couple weeks ago. So they're getting some votes. So
that's good to see.
Yeah, and they got most of their story, and I believe. Yep, the script and their modeling almost done, so they've just got a few other things like shooting for one thing.
Editing.
You know, kind of the important things, but I'm really hopeful for this. You know, maybe in a few years they'll be able to finish it and, you know, actually get those Hollywood producers to actually do something, you know, along with those studios who are incompetent.
Well, that's another topic, another podcast, another totally unrelated podcast. But
it still has relation to it, though. But maybe another time.
Another time. But yeah, because I know, like, Skycap and The World Tomorrow was actually, that movie that came out a couple years ago, was actually based on a short just like this. Someone came out with, like, a 6-minute short.
That was a really good movie. I like that movie.
That's pretty neat. It's kind of like Crimson Skies and MechWarrior-ish and all sorts of crazy crap tossed in there. But
I think it did well for, you know, what, How much money did it cost, do you remember, to produce?
It was quite a bit, because it was all green screen, I believe.
It was,
I don't think it did that well, though, for... Because it told us a new age of movie making, and obviously no one's really duplicated since then, so... Oh, well, it's a fun experiment.
I think it was a good idea, though.
Yeah, it was.
And that's... Oh, they have in their staff people that were FAFSA veterans from the old
really?
Old BattleTech.
Oh,
including artist Heinz Schuller, I believe it's pronounced. That's what it looks like. And, yeah, so they got a few people in the staff. So it's definitely a professional job, and that they really want to go through with this. I believe that's about all the time we have.
All right, that's about it. All the time we have. So thanks for watching the pilot episode of The Battlefield. And we hope to see you in future episodes where we'll cover different games, different topics, all sorts of fun stuff like modeling, painting, tactics, more house rules, or just
hopefully
fun
get
news
some
and
more people to
more people.
Show their different battle armies.
A lot of shows would be fun, but yeah, we'll quote live or film live or something. But it's all just planning stages right now. So thanks for watching, and we'll hope to see you maybe in the future.
Have a good one.
Yep, have a good night.